Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. Greetings to all of our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us this evening for the Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative Dare to Win radio broadcast. We're here every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And this evening, I am your hostess, Sister Nanana, along with Brother Kimbizi, who will be assisting us with the program this evening. So welcome to all of you. We're pleased to have you. Brother Kimbizi, are you there with us?
Good evening, Sister Nanana. Yes, I'm here. Good to hear your voice. Good to be with the family tonight.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice as well. And we usually start with our music, but for some reason this evening couldn't get that going. So we're just going to go ahead and start. How about that? All right.
We can make that work.
We can make that work. Wonderful. And once again, I want to extend a warm welcome to all of those who are listening with us and participating with us this evening on the Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative Dare to Win. This is where we have very sober and very serious discussion about the new systems and new institutions that are required in order to build and maintain the economic power for the Black communities, not only communities here in the continental United States, but we're talking Black communities globally, because Us Lifting Us is a global and international cooperative economic venture. And so that's what we're all about, and we invite all of you to participate with us in the discussion this evening. For those of you who are already on the call, we thank you for being with us. Those of you who might be listening in, if you would care to join into the discussion, please call at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And then press 1 on your keypad, on your telephone dial, to let us know if you have a question or a comment that you would like to make concerning the subject that we will be discussing this evening, or any subject that's concerning the economic health of the community of people of Black African descent. And we will certainly see your number come up on our screen and give you the opportunity to speak. So we invite all of you to participate with us in that manner. Also, we'd like everyone to take a look at our website, usliftingus.com. That's usliftingus.com. On that website, you will find all of the information concerning Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. You'll find information about our structure, our mission, the goals that we have achieved thus far, what we're planning for the future. You'll also find a listing of all of our supporters, as well as our members and member owners, those who have not only joined, but who have invested in purchasing what we call a unit or purchasing a share in the Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. So all of that information is on the website. Also, at the very top of the website, you'll see several tabs going across the top, and one says Apply to Join. We invite all of you who are not members of Us Lifting Us to go ahead and click on that tab, Apply to Join, and start your paperwork process to become a member of Us Lifting Us, and also to become a member owner of Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. So, Brother Kimbizi, would you care to give some words of welcome to our listening audience?
Greetings, brothers and sisters, across the country and throughout, around the globe and throughout the diaspora. We're excited always for the opportunity to share with you the work that we are doing in Us Lifting Us, the work of building the economic infrastructure and machinery that will allow us to take control and harness the economic power that is in our community and pass it forward to future generations. So every Thursday we have conversations around economic issues and how we are poised at this very important historical period to launch these economic systems that for the first time in 500 years will move us very quickly towards sovereignty and self-determination. So welcome, and look forward to the dialogue that we're going to share in tonight.
All right. Thank you so much for those words of welcome. And just to share a little bit more with our listening audience so that they can get to know us a little better and have a better feel for who we are, both myself and Brother Kimbizi are members of the executive board of Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. And part of our role on that board is to assist with dispersing information concerning Us Lifting Us and helping to provide direction and guidance to keep us on track as far as our achieving our goals and objectives. And so every Thursday when you listen in to the Us Lifting Us Dare to Win talk show on Blog Talk Radio, you will be hosted by at least one, if not two, members of the executive board of Us Lifting Us. We also invite those who are in the membership of Us Lifting Us, those who might have a particular interest in providing a service to Us Lifting Us, we would entertain the idea of having some of them, some of you all, to act as hosts and guests on the Thursday night broadcast as well. And the way that you could let us know about that, if you're interested or if you have any questions concerning Us Lifting Us or any information that you would care to share with us, you can call directly 404-592-2780. That's 404-592-2780, and leave a message on that phone number, and you will get a return call from a member of the Us Lifting Us board. No matter what your question or your concern is, your call will be returned. All right. So let's get right into the discussion for the evening, Brother Kimbizi. Are you up for that?
I certainly am.
All right. Well, that's good to hear, because I think this evening we're going to have a very lively discussion and hopefully lots of participation from our listening audience. something that has been in the news for the past, almost 2 weeks now, that has been very prominent and that almost all of us, I would dare to say, have had an opportunity to be exposed to, and that is the information concerning the meeting that Donald Trump had with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And so what that meeting, the question that brings up, I would pose for us, particularly as we start to look at and to move forward with our initiative in cooperative economics, is to ask the question, you know, what was that all about? And in what way does that relate to us? How should we be paying attention to that? What are the things that we should see there that's going on that we should be aware of that are affecting us? So would you have some thoughts and some comments on that, Brother Kimbizi?
Thank you, Sister Nanana, for the question. And yes, I think most of us have been reflecting on the significance of that meeting. And I think the first thing that we need to say right from the beginning is that that meeting is an example of an economic battle between competing capitalist interests, namely Russian oligarchs and Chinese interests, and the United States and her Western allies. What's being debated is which bloc will control the economic wealth of Korea, or will the status quo remain of a Southern Korea that's in the web of the United States and the West, with North Korea in the web of Russian oligarchs and the Chinese government. So pass all of the rhetoric and the posturing and will North Korea denuclearize. What we're really witnessing is a battle royale among capitalist interest groups. And that speaks to the need for an alternative economic model for the rest of the planet. Capitalism is about controlling the mineral resources and the labor of nations and communities around the globe. And when necessary, they don't mind sending in the Marines and dropping bombs and drones to force their will on other people. But the first thing that we want to be very sure and clear to state is that is a battle, that is an economic battle that parades around looking like some kind of political conflict. At the root of that struggle is a struggle for which economy and which economic interests are going to control Korea. So the lesson for the African continent and African people, I think, is that if we're serious about African sovereignty and self-determination, we must accelerate our work toward building our own economy based on the African values of Ujamaa, truth, justice, and righteousness, or forever be incarcerated and exploited by capitalism. Now, the good news, I think, for us is to realize that economies are systems that people control. In every society, all wealth resides within its people, their mineral resources and their labor power. So whether we're talking about gold or diamonds or coltan, these materials and these minerals only have the value people agree that they have. African genius, African people are the primary source of wealth on planet Earth, and the African continent has the richest mineral wealth on the planet. So right there, we should be clued into the truth that the means of eradicating and eliminating poverty on the continent and everywhere black folks live throughout the diaspora. We control that outcome. That's a decision that once we make to take control of the dollars that flow through our hands, we then can redirect that wealth towards the building of our own institutions and creating a different future for our children. So let me pause there, Nanana. You may want to inject another question.
Well, not necessarily another question at this point, but I certainly have a couple of comments that I'd like to make. You've triggered a couple of thoughts with me. First of all, the meeting between Trump and the North Korean leader, for us to recognize that meeting for what it truly is, that the charade, as you say, or the show that they're putting on and that has been played out concerning nuclear weapons, that this has all been to sort of mask the reality of what's going on, that there is truly an economic struggle or an economic war that's going on. That's the reality of it. And so what's being done on the surface is something that keeps us off track and keeps us looking in a different direction so that we don't actually see the true importance of economic power, and that this is something that we should be striving for and that we have a birthright to, that we have the right to control our own economy, to build our own economy, and to be in charge of it. And that brings me to another point of something that I heard you say, and that is something that's going to that does challenge us, I propose, that does challenge us to have a mindset that we, in fact, can do this, that we rightfully should have total and complete control and responsibility for our economic future and not have that be dependent upon anyone. And I have a judgment that for many of us that challenges us to take on a totally new thought process and to position ourselves in such a way that we start displaying some different behaviors to take on that total and that complete responsibility. Would you agree with that? Or you have another
100%. And I like your term to call it an economic war, because that's really what it is. Because we, certainly in the United States, have lived under a capitalist model for hundreds of years, we tend to think that that's the only system available to provide goods and services for society. But I think what is important to understand is that capitalism is irrational. It is driven by the need for maximum profit, and it must exploit all resources, both natural and human, in order for it to run and to continue to run. So the reason that we have wars around the globe, whether we're talking about Afghanistan or Iraq, whether we're talking about Somalia, whether we're talking about other conflicts on the continent of Africa, these are all expressions of capitalism attempting to dominate and control and exploit other people's resources and labor. And the other thing that capitalism always hides is the fact that it is a system based on theft. And by that I mean that the primary contradiction in capitalism is the contradiction between labor and the owners, in that it takes all of the labor inputs of the people who do the work to produce the surplus value or the profits, and then unfortunately that surplus value is stolen by the corporate owners, and that sets up a social dynamic where people who punch a clock every day and put in 8 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours are never able to catch up with the owners of the society because they're being paid only a portion of the wealth that they have generated. So let's just say on an hourly basis, you and I, if we're on the clock somewhere, we actually are producing upwards of $250 or $300 an hour worth of profit. But at the end of the day, all we get paid is $10 or $12 an hour for the labor that we put in. Meanwhile, the total surplus value or profit is confiscated by the quote-unquote owners. And so the working class, working people, never catch up because we are always being paid less than what we actually created. So that's the inherent and built-in theft that capitalism imposes on every society that operates under that system. The other thing that I think is important for us to understand is that even this society touts itself as being this great democracy, and I just want us to pause and just think a little bit about what that really is talking about. Is it real? Or is that just propaganda and hype? And the reason I say that is, in corporations, if you and I, Sister Nanana, were shareholders, and let's just say we each owned 100 shares of stock in Nike, for example. The dominant shareholders in Nike may own 100,000 shares of stock. And at the annual shareholders meeting held every year, and where they vote on what policies they're going to follow, in the capitalist system, every share equals one vote. So if someone has 100,000 shares, they have 100,000 votes. If you and I only have 100 shares each, we only have 100 votes. So you see, in that scenario, our vote, even though we quote unquote, because we have a share, have a say so, we're always outvoted. And we're always dominated by the major shareholders. And I was looking at some information. It said that 1% of people who are shareholders in the United States, the wealthiest 1%, control 94% of the shares of stock. So that is why, even though you and I may go through the expense of flying to the annual meeting and sitting up in there while these decisions are made regarding how the company is going to be run, a handful of people have already made the decision about what's going to happen. You and I simply do not have enough shares of stock to have an equal voice in that arena. Now, when we and Us Lifting Us talk about building a cooperative organization, and that's what we're doing. The way the cooperative model works is, if you have one co-op unit in Us Lifting Us, and I have 100 units, co-op units in Us Lifting Us, each member has one vote regardless of the number of shares that they own. So that everyone who comes to the Us Lifting Us annual meeting has one vote. And therefore, there is a genuine democracy and equality at the very basis of the organization that we are creating. And I think the difference is very clear in that model.
I really appreciate you providing that explanation. I think that is so vitally important, because what that brings up for me and what it illustrates is that in Ujamaa, in family-centered economics, in the model of cooperative economics that Us Lifting Us follows, the value of the individual, the value of that person's vote, of their say-so, is never, ever compromised in any way whatsoever. And everyone gets the same vote. Everyone has equal opportunity to participate in the decision-making process, no matter how many units that they own. And so having that as a core value, that says to me, that speaks volumes, because it says that the true integrity and the humanity of the person, of the family, is truly respected, whereas in other organizations, as you pointed out, what is paramount is the dollar, how much money has been invested, and that's very different from what's practiced in Us Lifting Us. I just want to take a moment here, Brother Kimbizi, to once again encourage our listeners to call in and to ask questions and to make comments. We really do want to hear from you. The number to call into is 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and then press the number 1, the digit 1 on your keypad. If you would care to ask a question, just make a comment. We would we will immediately give you the opportunity to do that, and we welcome having you. So this is a discussion, Brother Kimbizi, that I judge is vitally important for us to really get a perspective in terms of these world, so-called world events and other major events and how they impact economically. Just kind of slightly changing, not changing the subject, but gearing it in a little bit different direction. Something else that comes to mind for me in terms of the economy here in the U.S. and how it's shifting and how it's being impacted. Many U.S. companies, companies that have been started, owned, and you know, identified as American or U.S. companies, have been sold to foreigners. You know, we have, let's, you know, take a look at Ben and Jerry's, which is now owned by a combination of British and Dutch interests. Burger King is now owned by a Brazilian company. 7-Eleven is now owned by Japanese. Holiday Inn, now owned by the United Kingdom. And, you know, the list goes on, and it seems to be growing continuously that this is a trend that foreign ownership is taking over U.S. companies. And some of these are major companies. For example, there is a segment of IBM, the personal computer business segment of IBM, which is now owned by China. And so I'm asking the question and asking you to comment on how do you see this foreign ownership relating to the discussion or the subject you were talking about earlier, capitalism versus cooperative economics, and this whole arena that we as people of Black African descent are facing in terms of moving forward to improve our economic condition. What do you see in that shifting of that ownership that we need to be paying attention to?
Well, the first thing is I need to catch my breath. When you said Burger King has been bought out by, I think you said Brazilian interests, and 7-Eleven
exactly.
by the Japanese, and Holiday
mm-hmm.
Inn by United Kingdom, you know, these are businesses that many of us have grown up with. How many times have we run in and out of Burger King and eaten there or stayed in Holiday Inn? These are all brands that are we have certainly familiarity with, and some of us might even call it loyalty to. And
mm-hmm.
now you're making us aware that they have been taken over by foreign corporations. I think one of the things that we have to be very clear about is that capitalism is driven by a core set of values, and it is the expression of those core values that we have to pay very close attention to. So one of the core values of capitalism is competition, because the goal is to maximize profit at all costs. Just because you made 10% profit for me last month, if you can't make 11% profit for me next month, then I'm looking around for someone who can. So there's this constant shifting and realigning of corporate control to maximize profit, and that means then that whatever corporations have the deepest pockets and the strongest cash flow are in positions to buy out weaker corporations. And so we see that taking place, as you so vividly pointed out, when companies so familiar to us as Burger King and 7-Eleven and Holiday Inn and IBM are now owned by foreign interests. I think it's also important to note when we talk about these core values of capitalism, we see competition squarely in our face. But it's also another core value of capitalism is hyper-individualism. So it's all about what benefits me. It's me, myself, and I. Get all I can, sit on the, you know, get all I can all I get, and sit on the can. And don't let anybody else have anything that I've been able to amass. So there's this hyper-individualism that is antithetical to healthy human community. We don't exist on the planet as isolated individuals. When we find ourselves in those situations, you notice the divorce rate. I mean, not the – well, the divorce rate – and the suicide rate mm-hmm. go up because that mm-hmm. is not how that is not a healthy environment for human beings to live in. And so we have competition. We have hyper-individualism. We have materialism, which then means that humans no longer have value. What has values is the latest brand of Nike sneakers. The size of the wheelbase of your luxury limousine, how much gold you got around your neck and how big the chain is. Everything is reduced to some material expression of a dollar. And people now are racing to drape themselves in all of these symbols of value so that they feel good about themselves. But that's because the core values that healthy societies run by have been subverted and replaced by individualism, competition, materialism, militarism, the ideas of white supremacy, this whole notion that you can lie and cheat and steal, and as long as you get away with it, you're golden. I think Trump is the personification of that. I mean, normally, if a national leader was caught lying once or twice, they would lose all of their credibility. Trump lies every day, all day long, and is caught in those lies the very next day. And yet and still, there are people who would support him. That's because the value of honesty and integrity is no longer important in this capitalist model. So to your question, Sister Nanana, when we in Us Lifting Us talk about core values, the value of community and family-centered economics, the value of spirit taking precedence over material, the value of cooperation rather than competition when that doesn't make sense to be competing, an appreciation for the health of the planet and its ecological systems. None of that is taken into account under a capitalist model. So if the human species is to survive on this planet, we simply must move to a different economic system that has a different set of core values. And that's one of the strengths that we and Us Lifting Us are making when we talk to our people. If you want a sane society, if you want a society that takes care of the planet and reduces global warming so that all of us can live and share the resources of the planet, if we truly want peace, then we have to have an economic system that has those values at its core. And
for
so
sure.
That's why
for
when
sure.
when you talk about these foreign companies taking over these American corporations, what they are really taking over, I think, Sister Nanana, is the labor of the people who still work in those companies and the surplus value. That's what's being taken over. And so we are slowly living through the disintegration, if you will, of the American empire. And some say that by 2030, it will have collapsed completely. But we're living through the downward spiral of what used to be the world leader, America, that now is being picked apart by stronger economic interests from other parts of the world.
You know, Brother Kimbizi, you've made some very eye-opening and extremely thought-provoking comments as you have given us your thoughts on the foreign ownership of what used to be American companies. And one of the things that in your comments that has really struck me is here again for us to be able to look beyond the surface of what's going on. What we see on the surface is that these companies are being purchased by foreign interests. But what's really happening, as you pointed out, is that the labor is what's being purchased. Literally, putting our shoulder to the wheel and making these companies work, bringing them to the high profit levels that they achieve. It is our labor that they are purchasing. And I think that, for me at least, that puts a whole different spin on how to look at this. And when I first saw the information, the listing, and it's easy to find if you Google online foreign purchases of U.S. companies, and literally there are at least 20 or 30 major companies. The first thing that came up for me is the question around loyalty. Should we even consider whether or not there is or should there be any loyalty from a company when we are a quote-unquote employee at that company. And here again, you know, putting that side by side with the cooperative economic model, the family-centered economic model that that ULU puts forth, we understand that our loyalty is to our community and to people who are of Black African descent, with no question. And I see we have a caller here, Brother Kimbizi, that wants to speak. And this is the caller, last four digits, 6698, 6698. You have a question or a comment? Go ahead, please.
Greetings, family. This is Brother Thurman in Richmond giving you a call.
All right. How are you, Brother Thurman?
Oh, I'm doing great tonight. You all just bringing so much good, stimulating reality, even though all of it's not good stuff, you know, when it comes to the people and the planet, but it is very good in terms of informing us. And thank you so much, Sister Nanana and Brother Kimbizi. And I just want to briefly say that what's been said in the last few minutes, including these corporations taking over and to exploit the labor, and it was mentioned that if the human species is to survive, and throughout the conversation about these corporations and Burger King and all of those things, 7-Eleven, my mind is just constantly thinking about it tells us, as we are processing this information and what these corporations are doing, that we now more than ever need each other. And this us lifting us cooperative model is that security that we so badly need to position ourselves, so as they take over and as they collapse the capitalist system, that we have pooled our resources and got each other's really back very strong and economically powerful, that we can be employing our people that will otherwise be squeezed out, as there are fewer and fewer jobs and robots are taking over, and these corporations that their in terms of employing people, the priority would not be us, and we must make us our priority. And the best model that we know of is Us Lifting Us. And I just want to say to all of the sisters and brothers out there, if you're not already a member of Us Lifting Us, take a good look at Us Lifting Us. That's usliftingus.com. And be a part so that we can do our part to take control of the economics of our communities, and also to leave a legacy for the babies, the children that come behind us. I'm done. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Brother Thurman, for those very timely and thoughtful comments that you've made. And on the heels of what Brother Thurman just shared with us, I would like our listening audience to also take an opportunity to look at the website for Cafe ULU. Cafe ULU is the first cooperative economic venture that Us Lifting Us has come forth with. It is a networking lounge and cafe and coffee shop. The website is cafeulu.com, cafeulu.com. And so we invite you to take a look at that. It's located in Atlanta. The business is up and running and starting to progress and to do quite well. And we are very confident that we will have duplications of Cafe ULU in many major cities all across the U.S. and outside of the U.S. as well. But it is a business venture that is totally structured on the model of Ujamaa family economics, in that every single step in that process, where the coffee beans are coming from, how they are processed and harvested, all of the food items in the cafe, anything and everything that you can think of that has to do with bringing forth that business venture has been done by the hands of people of Black African descent. And so this is a wonderful illustration of a live illustration of what we're talking about when we talk about Ujamaa family-centered economics and keeping those dollars circulating within our community. So that's Cafe Ulu, CafeUlu.com, CafeUlu.com. Okay. Well,
and Sister Nanana, yes. that address is 2036 Sylvan Road, Atlanta, Georgia. So those in Metro Atlanta, that's 2036 Sylvan Road, Atlanta, Georgia. If you haven't been by to enjoy a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, I don't know what you're waiting for. Come on through.
Yes, it is a wonderful and lively place and just has such good energy just to be in that environment for sure. And thank you for providing the exact address. I appreciate that. So, you know, just moving the discussion a little bit further, and I, you know, I think we have certainly have time to address at least one other subject. As we were talking about Cafe Ulu, and it triggered for me, especially since we have coffee in Cafe Ulu that comes from many different places, you know, around the globe. That coffee has been planted, has been harvested, has been processed, shipped, all by the hands of people of Black African descent. To me, that really provides a live illustration of Ulu putting forth the and practicing being a global cooperative and having that as a goal and objective. And so, Brother Kimbizi, would you make some observations or some comments for us as we get close to winding down here? Why is it that Ulu desires to achieve a global cooperative economy? Why not just stick strictly with the continental U.S. or certain specific areas? Why did Ulu choose to have a global economy as part of its goals and objectives?
Because, thank you, Sister Nanana, for that very excellent question. Wherever we as Black African people live, we want a certain quality of life. We're pushing towards sovereignty and self-determination. And in order to realize that, we have to have an economic model that breathes those values. And so if there are no Black African people in a particular locale, then whatever economic system those people who live there want to work with, that's up to them. But for us who are pulling it and working our way out of, you know, 500 years of subjugation and domination, which was held in place by capitalism, which is the economic system designed specifically for our exploitation, then we simply must have an economic model based on cooperation, based on African values, based on Ujamaa, family-centered economics. So that's point number one. The other thing that I think is important to mention is that whether we have thought about it or not, coffee is the second highest traded commodity in the world, second only behind oil. So it's an extremely valued commodity, and the exchange of this commodity is very lucrative when it, you know, depending on how it is directed. So, you know, we are sourcing coffee from Cameroon, from Kenya, from Ethiopia, African farmers, and, you know, in a fair trade system so that they are compensated properly for their labor. And what we are simply doing is harnessing this commodity and circulating this economic activity in a way that benefits all the black hands that touch this product, from the growing of the coffee beans to the roasting of the beans and serving of the coffee cup at the end of the consumer chain. We want all of those entities to benefit from this activity. That's what family-centered economics strives to do. So rather than going to the coffee chains that are of the dominant culture, for those members of our community who are, you know, black and African, we invite you to come to Cafe Ulu, which is our coffee shop. That one of the things that gives me a tremendous sense of pleasure is to walk into Cafe Ulu and to know that I'm a part owner in this business. How many businesses do you and I walk into on a daily basis and know that we are part owners in that business? You know, I go to Kroger, I buy gas from different companies, I'm shopping for, you know, I'm going into Home Depot or Office Depot. These are not companies that I'm a part owner in, and so I don't benefit from them other than the products that I purchase. But when I step inside of Cafe Ulu, not only are they providing me a product that I desire, but I'm also participating in the wealth generation that this cafe is setting in motion. And so I can step in there with my children and say, this is our institution, and we're building it for the present and for future generations. And I think we are trying to get us as a people to awaken to the fact that we can build an alternative economy. This is well within our means, and we are trying to take control of the $1.3 trillion that passes through our hands every year. And it's been a couple of weeks since we've pointed this out, but sometimes we're not even fully aware of how much $1.3 trillion is. But the example that we use periodically is, say someone put $1 million in your lap coming up on 10 o'clock, and then at 11 o'clock they put another $1 million in your lap. And they did that at 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock. They did it around the clock, 24 hours. And then they did it all day the next day and the next week and the next month. $1 million an hour, around the clock. It would take 114 years to get to $1.3 trillion. That's how much money is flowing through black fingers. What Us Lifting Us is saying, let's harness that. Let's pull these resources into our own reservoir and build the institutions that we need and benefit from the profit that they generate.
You have provided such a graphic visual of what that $1 trillion looks like. And what it brings to mind for me is that a lot of what Us Lifting Us is doing, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, is helping us as a nation of people, helping us to change our visual, our perspective, our mindset, our definitions around money and how we see ourselves in relationship with money and with wealth, and redefining that in such a way that it's all ours. We can literally have what we want to have. And we can do that by moving as a unit in a cooperative manner to achieve that. So very, very powerful visual that you gave us. And so I truly appreciate you sharing that visual representation of what $1 trillion would look like. And so as we're starting to wind down here, Brother Kimbizi, I would just like to share that I truly appreciate having had the opportunity to share the Dare to Win radio discussion for Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative, to share that with you this evening. And I am just very hopeful that all of our listeners have gained something from listening to the program this evening that will enlighten them and that will encourage those who are not members of Us Lifting Us to go on to the website, usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com, and to click on the link that says apply to join and become a member of this very powerful initiative of actually building a new livelihood for all of us going forward. And do you have any closing comments for us, Brother?
Yes, Sister Nanana, in just in 1 minute, it's a $50 annual membership fee that covers administrative costs, and to the pooling aspect of our resources is we are tasking ourselves to put up $1,000 to purchase one co-op unit in Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. Now, we realize that some people have that sitting parked to the side and can write a check or put it on a credit card in a heartbeat. Others may have to work to generate $1,000. We have mechanisms that allow our people to contribute in whatever way works best for them. The goal is to get everyone who is a member of Us Lifting Us to purchase a co-op unit for $1,000 in a time frame that is comfortable for them. And just to think about the fact, for every 1,000 members who do that, that generates $1 million that we then put forward towards opening new businesses that are cooperatively owned. So every entity that we operate, that we open, is a cooperative entity. The people who work there are members of the co-op. The people who shop there are members of the co-op. The people who benefit from the business are members of the co-op. So that's what we mean by pooling our resources. $50 annual membership fee for administrative costs, and then the purchase of at least one co-op unit at $1,000. When we do this, the sky is the limit. And our economic destiny and political destiny is in our hands.
Thank you so much, Brother Kimbizi. We certainly appreciate those closing comments. And thank you to all of our listeners. We look forward to being with you again next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Blog Talk Radio for Us Lifting Us, Dare to Win. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, sister. Peace, family.
Good night, Brother Kimbizi. Peace. So when you're riding through the